All right, as we start into chapter 22, something I said on Wednesday night, I just want to reiterate. As we look at these laws that God has given His people, that what we have is a lot of what God wanted to be done. Occasionally, He'll give us an insight into why it was to be done this way. Sometimes we just kind of have to interject maybe some of our best thoughts on that. And sometimes I'll be honest, sometimes I read those laws and say, I just don't know exactly why God wanted it to be done that way. But to me, that's not important. The important thing is God said that's what He wanted, and that's what they were to do. And I think the other thing that I want to reiterate is that what we see here is tells us a lot about the nature of God and what God expects of man and the way He expects man to conduct himself. The idea, as I said on Wednesday night, the idea of integrity, being responsible for your actions, being honest in your actions, all those things we see in the laws that He gave His people here in chapters 21, 22, and 23. So when we left off on Wednesday night, we're ready to start chapter 22. And let's just read the first few verses here. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. If a thief is found breaking in and he is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. If the sun has risen on him, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. He should make full restitution. If he has nothing, then he should be sold for his theft. If the theft is certainly found alive in his hand, whether it is an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he shall restore double. So, the idea of theft. And if an ox is stolen, he's supposed to restore 5-fold. If a sheep, 4-fold. Is found alive, then that number's just doubled. And then a couple of verses, it's interesting, the verses 2 and 3, I've already received a couple of questions, a couple of comments about before we'd even gotten there. And the idea here is the contrast between a man breaking into a house at night versus a man breaking into a house during the daytime. There in verse 2, certainly the emphasis seems to be if he's found breaking in, so he's struck and he dies, there will be no guilt for his bloodshed. And then in the beginning of verse 3 it says, if the sun has risen, then there would be guilt. And, of course, the question is, well, why the difference? And so I ask back, what is the difference between these two situations? One has light, the other doesn't. If you think back to this time and you think back to what it was like to live during this time, if a thief was to break into your house at night, could you flip on the light switch? Could you reach for the flashlight? The best you might hope to possibly do is if you had a lamp burning to maybe put it up so there'd be enough light that you could actually see what was going on. I think that's probably a pretty big if. I don't think most of the Israelites kept lamps burning in their houses during the night. And so the idea of being able to see versus not being able to see. In the daytime, you can identify a threat. Your ability to escape from a threat is much easier than in the dead of night in the wilderness with very limited light. And so the idea to me, and I'll be happy to open this up to others that might have separate, is the idea of being able to identify a threat and to be able to escape from a threat when you couldn't identify the threats right there at you, you were allowed to use maximum force. In the opposite, where you could actually identify the threat, possibly get away, then that maximum force does not appear to be authorized. So that's my thoughts on it. So anybody want to kind of throw out what they think about it? Because that's the only difference I can see in these two passages, light versus not having light. John? And that could certainly be it as well. And Brother Paul seems to think that might be on as well. And I would not certainly disagree with that. The only thing that would cause me a little bit of pause with that is if the thief is found breaking in and he is struck so he dies, versus if the sun has risen on him. And it almost appears to me to be exactly the same situation. The only difference appears to be the sun, but I certainly couldn't argue with that interpretation. Anybody else? It is an interesting passage. You know, it obviously, in the days and times that we live in, it does give us pause. Of course, this is the old covenant, and you know, we could get in a very long discussion about how this may or might not apply to the times that we live in now. But if there's no more thoughts on that, let's continue to move on. I want to try to make a little more progress. I didn't quite get to where I wanted to get on Wednesday night. Verse 5, if a man causes a field or a vineyard to be grazed and lets loose his animal and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. If fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that the stacked grain, standing grain, or field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. So once again, the idea of when you do something, make sure to the best of your ability that nobody else is going to be harmed by your actions. And if they are harmed, then you have to make restitution. And it's interesting that the restitution in these passages is not outlined because it would be contingent on how much damage would be done. How much of a man's field was consumed, how much of his crops were consumed by the fire. So I think that's the reason you don't see the exact damages specified. Those would be determined based on the damage. And then the idea of giving a man something that is yours for safekeeping, it seems to be what we see here in verse 7. If a man delivers to his neighbor money or articles to keep, and it is stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house shall be brought to the judges to see whether he has put his hand into the neighbor's goods. For any kind of trespass, whether it concerns an ox, a donkey, a sheep, or clothing, or of any kind of lost thing which another claims to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whomever the judges condemned shall pay double to his neighbor. If a man delivers to his neighbor a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any animal to keep, and it dies, is hurt, or driven away, no one seeing it, then an oath of the Lord shall be between both them both, that he has not put his hand to his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept that, and he shall not make it good. But if, in fact, it is stolen from him, he shall make restitution to the owner of it. If it is torn to pieces by a beast, then he shall bring it as evidence that he shall not make good what was torn. If a man borrows anything from his neighbor and it becomes injured or dies, the owner of it not being with it, he shall surely make it good. If its owner was with it, he shall not make it good. If it was hired, it came for its hire. So several different things going on here. The idea of maybe you're going on a trip or for some reason you didn't have room to store things and you take them to your neighbor for safekeeping, basically. And for some reason those things disappear from your neighbor while it's supposedly in his care. And if it's stolen, it was one thing. If it was an animal versus property, it even seems to be a little bit different. So there in verse 8, if the thief is found, then the master of house, if the thief is not found, the master would be brought and they would judge. And the idea of judging would basically say, hey, did you put your hand to your neighbor's goods? Did you take what belonged to your neighbor? And they would judge the cause. And if they decided that he had, then he was to pay double. There in verse 10, if a man delivered to his neighbor a donkey, a sheep, or any animal to keep, and it was hurt or driven away, no one seeing it, then they would take an oath. And he was not to make it good if the oath was said, hey, I didn't have anything to do with it. But if in fact it had been stolen, then he was required to make it good. And then if it was torn by a beast, all he had to do was bring the evidence of that, and he was not to make it good. And then the last piece there that we deal with has to do with the idea of borrowing something. And during the course of it being borrowed, it dies or is hurt in some way. It made a difference whether or not the owner was with it. If the owner was with it, you didn't have to make restitution. If he wasn't, you did. And it also made a difference as to whether or not you had provided the owner some kind of compensation for the use of that animal. The idea of basically you had rented it, if you would, and you had given them some money. In that case, the money served as the compensation. It came for its hire, is the way it's phrased there. In the verse 19, verse 15. So any questions or comments about any of that? I know I covered it rather quickly, but I'm certainly open to questions or comments about that. All right, not seeing any. Verse 16. If a man entices a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he shall surely pay the bride price for her to be his wife. If the father utterly refused to give her to him, he shall pay money according to the bride price of virgins. So this is obviously different than what we saw when the Ten Commandments were given. Adultery is condemned and not allowed. It's obviously different than what we will see when we get over to Leviticus in chapter 20. And it deals with adultery and several different instances and different kinds. The idea seems to be here that you have a woman that is not engaged, not promised to anyone, and the man seduces her. And if that happens, then he was to give the father the dowry, if you will, the bride price, and he was to take her as his wife. If the father says, no, I'm not going to do that, then he was still to pay the money. And it's interesting to me, and once again, we're not given all the whys, the man here seems to bear all the responsibility. It's on him. He's the one that has to pay. We're not given any indication that anything was to happen to the young woman in this passage. And that's an interesting observation. But the idea that the father wouldn't bear any loss is kind of the only thing I can get out of this. You know, questions or comments about that? It is interesting that it is different, and the idea that her not being committed to another man obviously figures into this and differently than what we'll see, like I said, in Leviticus when we see the other laws dealing with this type of sin mentioned. Right, moving on, we have a couple that's perversions, if you will, just kind of thrown in at random. And it's interesting, some of these seem to be lumped in categories. And then we see things like, the verses we just read, this next verse, you shall not permit a sorceress to live. And then the one that follows, whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. And so the idea of things like sorcery or witchcraft, those kind of things were not to be tolerated within the children of Israel. And then perversions like lying with an animal was not to be tolerated amongst God's people. And just flat prohibitions, and it was capital punishment in both those cases. The punishment was very severe. Verse 20, he who sacrifices to any god except the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed. You shall neither mistreat a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. We'll see that idea again of being kind even to those that are strangers, not oppressing them, and going back and referencing the time that they were in Egypt as the reason for this. And then beginning in verse 22 through verse 24, it says, you shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way, and they cry at all to me, I will surely hear their cry. My wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives shall be widows and your children fatherless. Anybody notice anything different about these couple of verses as compared to some of the other laws that we've been reading about? And I'll be honest, the first time I read it, it didn't strike me, and I don't want to read too much into it. But what struck me as different about these particular verses is God is giving the judgment. This is not turned over to man to do. He says, if you afflict them and they cry out to me, I'm going to take care of this. He didn't hand this over to the people to say, put them to death. He didn't hand them over to the people to say, inflict some punishment on them. This was God. And I found that interesting. He said, you know, my wrath will become hot and I will kill you with the sword. And your wives shall be widows and your children fatherless. And like I said, I don't want to read too much into it, but it almost gives me the idea that inflicting harm on people like that that have already endured so much was just something God was not willing to tolerate. And it bore a very stiff penalty to the point that that man's wife and children would become fatherless and husbandless. And it just, interesting thought. So moving on to verse 25. If you lend money to any of my people who are poor among you, you shall not be like the moneylender to him. You shall not charge him interest. If you ever take your neighbor's garment as a pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. So the idea when you lend money, you shouldn't charge interest. You shouldn't inflict on them a penalty, if you will. I read one commentator on this, and his idea, and of course, I'm not an expert on this, but his thought was that lending money back in those times was not like we see it today. And the idea of what we see today is we often see the lending of money for purchasing large houses or the lending of money for some major investment to start a business. That lending money during this period of time was more to deal with some type, particular type of emergency or something that might come along. And the idea that if you were to charge interest, then you would just be compounding that person's problem that, you know, that they found themselves in. I think that is certainly one thought about that. But like I said, not being an expert in that particular time and how money was handled, I can't speak for the validity of that, but I think it's certainly a thought that's, you know, worth giving, you know, some attention to. But the idea, and even in the following verse about taking a man's garment in pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. If you took a man's garment and you were going to return it to him at the end of the day, that's a very short period of time, was the other thought that came to my mind. And the idea I kind of came up with after thinking about this is being willing to help your neighbor, you know, a fellow Hebrew, if you will, without, as I was saying, inflicting any harm with them. Just be willing to help and to not demand or want something in return. Is kind of the thought that I get there. And I think about today and in the church and seeing those that may be in need in the church and being willing to extend help to those people. And, you know, so the idea that, hey, you know, if you need some money, I'm willing to lend you some money. And I'm not worried about when I'm going to get repaid for it. It's kind of, you know, something I think about when I read these type of verses and how the children of Israel were to treat in that type of transactions with each other. Questions or comments about that? Right.
It's just everything's upside down.
Yeah.
This is the same thing that we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's really the same type of thought that we see throughout the Bible. And, you know, the idea of loving your neighbor as yourself, and that being, you know, one of the greatest commandments. And my thought is that it sounds very easy. It's the execution that gets us in trouble, I think, a lot of times. It is very easy. Because obviously all you have to do is look at a situation and say, how would I want to be treated in that situation? It's whether or not we're willing to follow through with that I think gets a lot of us in trouble. Other questions or comments?
Right.
higher.
So God was not opposed to someone hiring out.
Right.
And if they hired out, they'd be responsible
right.
for the animal or whatever. Interest
yeah.
is
yeah, that's different.
Money and
yeah.
it out.
Yeah, that's different.
Giving money for hire.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does. You know, and really when you sum up all these, the idea, I've said before, honesty, integrity, responsibility for your actions. I mean, that's really at the heart of everything we see outlined in these passages. And in here, like I said, the idea of just not taking advantage of someone is there as well. Yeah, that's very true. Nathan?
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of the times when we take out loans for paying or so on are really not things that we want.
Yeah.
It's things that we want now. And then
right.
we have to wait a bunch more or
right.
a period of time to buy. But back then, you can see this in some of Jesus' parables where people
right.
come, they work for a day, and
yeah.
they get paid for that day.
Right.
And a lot of these people, they were living day to day. It's not like
right.
we're paid.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. You never really see it spelled out as such, but to me, the idea of compassion is there. Even though you're not really said to have compassion, the idea that you see displayed in a lot of these is that type of idea of having compassion on a brother or someone that is in need. I think is there. So picking up there. Let's pick it up in verse 28. You shall not revile God nor curse a ruler of your people. You shall not delay to offer the first of your ripe produce and your juices. The firstborn of your sons you shall give to me. Likewise, you shall do with your oxen and your sheep. It shall be with its mother 7 days. On the eighth day you shall give it to me. And you shall be holy men to me. You shall not eat meat torn by beast in the field. You shall throw it to the dogs. So the idea of giving God the first fruits, the firstborn, is something we've talked about in an earlier class. And then the idea of, there in verse 31, you shall be holy men to me and not eating those things that are torn by beasts in the field. You could throw it to the dogs, but you weren't to eat it. And that pretty much sums up what we see there in chapter 22. Is there any questions or comments about chapter 22 this morning? I know I covered it very quickly. Like I said, I was a little bit behind where I wanted to be on Wednesday, so I wanted to try to catch up a little bit if we could. All right, so getting into chapter 23. You shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil. You shall not testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him. If you see the donkey or the one who hates you lying under its burden, and you refrain from helping it, you shall surely help him with it. You shall not pervert the judgment of the poor in his dispute. Several things dealt with in the first six verses of that chapter. First, the idea of a perjury or giving a false report or false statement, if you will, in some way to pervert justice. Or following a crowd there in verse 2 to testify in a dispute so as to turn or pervert justice. Verses 3 there, and then again in verse 6, the idea of a poor and being poor, and you were not to basically feel sorry for him and pervert justice in his favor because you felt sorry for him. And the flip side of that is, you weren't to pervert justice and not give him a fair shake because he was poor. The poor deserved just as much justice as the rich, is the idea I get from those verses. And then the idea of someone that you consider your enemy or someone that hates you and seeing their animal either going astray or under a burden and not being willing to help is the other thing that's dealt with there. And if we're not real careful, that's one, the principle that's laid out there is one that we can have difficulty with today. And the idea of not being willing to help someone that maybe we don't get along with or doesn't get along with us or has inflicted us some harm in times past, and carrying that grudge and letting that grudge in some way affect what we are or are not willing to do for that person, even if that person's in need or their property is somehow in need. Going back to the point that Ron was making earlier, similar principles to what we see laid out in the Sermon on the Mount. Once again, the same type of thing that is what we see here. And the reoccurring observation that I'd put in this is, you know, the idea is the scales of justice were always to be balanced, regardless of the man's social status, regardless of whether he had money, didn't have money. God demands justice. And the perversion of justice is not something that God was willing to tolerate amongst his people. Questions or comments about any of that? And that's exactly right. And unfortunately, what I see a lot of times in business is people wanting to kind of rewrite the facts to make them look good. I've seen in times past where I work, people wanting to kind of rewrite the stories because maybe they made a bad decision. And they want to make that decision look better or want to make it look like somebody else made that decision. And the idea that we as Christians can't let that be said about us. As going back to what we were talking about on Wednesday night, the idea of when somebody asks you a question or somebody asks for your testimony about any situation, they know that they are going to get the truth. And that's what should always be said of us, is that if we're asked a question, if we're asked to provide testimony, that whoever's asking that knows they're going to get the truth based on our actions. Brother Paul.
This command about preferring your neighbors or befriending your neighbor, stop even if he is your enemy, it's a statement in the New Testament that says that you are to love your enemies. That word doesn't mean be friends to, and he may not be asking you.
Right.
Chapter 1 Corinthians, I mean, Romans. He is talking about this
And you saying that reminded me, and I think I was having this conversation with Brother John just it's been probably a few months back. And the idea that when you look at Paul and you look at the deep concern Paul had for other brethren, brethren that had gone astray, other brethren in other congregations, and you look at all the epistles that he wrote, and interlaced in all those epistles is that idea of his deep concern for other people, his deep concern for other people's souls. And as I was talking to John about this, I said, I'm afraid that a lot of times, even within myself and certainly amongst some of the other, I don't see that type of deep concern and love that I see Paul express in a lot of those epistles. And it's probably something I need to work on that I think society today is somehow it wants to say, well, man's responsible for his own decisions. He makes a bad decision, that's on him. And while that may be true, that doesn't diminish the concern I'm supposed to have for his soul. And as you were saying, I couldn't help but think about that conversation and think about that I need to be more concerned for my fellow brethren that have gone astray, the people of the world that I see that are astray and need Christ in order to get them in the right relationship with God. Any other questions or comments before we move on? It would certainly be difficult, but it. Yeah. I mean, Stephen, similar thought as he's being stoned. Just something to think about. So as we move on, picking up there in verse 7 of chapter 23, keep yourself far from a false matter. Do not kill the innocent and the righteous, for I will not justify the wicked. And you shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the discerning and perverts the words of the righteous. You shall not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of a stranger, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. So once again, there the idea of not perverting judgments, the balance of justice the scales of justice need to be balanced. Not putting the innocent to death, not taking a bribe, and there in verse 9, the same thought of not oppressing a stranger because you were strangers in the land of Egypt is there again. Verse 10, 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce, but in the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what is left the beasts of the fields may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive groves. 6 days shall you do your work, and the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and your son and your female servant and strangers may be refreshed. And in all that I have said to you, be circumspect, and make no mention of the names of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth. As I was thinking about that idea of, 6 years you were to sow, and then the seventh year you were to let the land rest, or that those that are poor and the beasts of the fields may eat of that. And Nathan made the comment earlier about how these people live day to day in some cases. Think about the amount of faith it would have taken not to sow a field for a year. Think about the faith you had to have in God to say, hey, look, God, you promised, I believe you, this is a command, I'm going to follow this command, I'm not going to plant this field. When maybe you didn't know where that year's worth of food would come from. But you were going to trust in God that since that was his command that he would provide. Was one of the thoughts that came to my mind as I was reading that. And then certainly in a year where we're going to be focused on faith here, I think it's a lesson that we can take from that. We see the idea of the Sabbath rest being introduced once again, and we've talked a little bit about that in previous classes. And then verse 13 here, make no mention of the name of other gods, nor let it'd be heard from your mouth. And as I was putting in my notes here out beside that particular verse,
I put why with a question mark. Why? Why not make mention of these other gods? And as I thought about that, and like I said, I don't know that I have the answer to that question. But one of the thoughts that did pop into my head was, what happens if you were to talk about these other gods? If you let that be a conversation within your house? At the very least, you might prompt some curiosity about it, mind you, Paul. And I don't know if that's the reason, but as I thought about that and I mulled it over in my head, I said, why not even make mention of it? And I thought, well, you know, making mention of, you know, I think about the curiosity of a child. Sometimes if you mention things in a certain way, you can kind of watch the light bulb go off in that kid's head. It's like, I wonder about that. Well, think about that. And I think a lot of times, even when I look at our society today, we have become somewhat desensitized, especially to certain sins. And it's because they have become such a common conversation in our household, or maybe the TV that's turned on has a common theme that particular sin is repeatedly, an exposure to those things repeatedly in some ways desensitizes us to just how bad they are. Is some of the thought that I had about that. And I throw that out because I think it's something to consider, something to think about how familiar we let ourselves become with things that God considers to be wrong. And I think that's probably a pretty good place to stop this morning. And so when we pick up, we'll pick up on Wednesday night in chapter 23 and verse 14. I appreciate your comments this morning.